Lance.
Good morning, Teller.
You know, Lance and Teller set their alarm clocks, their radio alarm clocks, to wake up right on us. True showbiz people. This is the day. This is Penn Jillette, and this is Free FM, CBS FM, Free FM. I'm Penn Jillette. Michael Goudeau, not sitting across from me, as he always does, but rather sitting to my left. Because we have a guest. We have a smart guest, which I think is maybe the first time in radio.
Yeah, well,
morning radio history. Name another guest that's been smart on any sort of radio show. David Lee Roth, list his smart guests. Just off the top of your head. This guest is so smart, he knows Bob Kornrevere's wife's name, which took us 7 minutes to get on the air. And that name is?
Zigrid Fry Revere.
Because we are sitting here with Bob Kornrevere,
hooray,
who is the free speech lawyer. Who's ahead of you?
Oh, there's a long list.
But you've argued in front of the Supreme Court.
I have.
Yeah, that's it for a lawyer, right?
Well, that is the show. but there are a lot of lawyers who've argued cases in front of the Supreme Court, and many First Amendment lawyers who have. They're very fine lawyers.
But a lot is not a million.
Well,
a lot is 100.
Well, a million is a lot. I still think of a million as a
lot.
Sure,
that's what I mean. That's what I'm saying. It's like 100.
There are a million DJs.
There are millions of DJs. And DJs who have argued in front of the Supreme Court is
I take
zero.
That as zero, yeah.
Zero, yeah. So, and how many cases have you done?
I've done one.
And what was that case?
That was United States versus Playboy Entertainment Group.
Oh, see. See, yeah. Maybe being a juggler won't get you laid, but being a lawyer, there's an upside to that.
A lawyer for Playboy.
I know. You get the Playboy case. And what was your what was the case?
Well, it was a case about a part of the 1996 Telecommunications Act that happened to target Playboy's cable channels. And so we were in litigation for about 3 years on the case and ended up before the Supreme Court and, in the end, won on a 5-4 decision.
Yeah! And a squeaker! He wins on a squeaker.
He punts.
Was it tense?
There were a lot of tense moments during that 3-year period, but everything came out okay in the end.
And how much time were you actually looking at the 9 people in the ropes?
Well, when you're arguing in front of the Supreme Court, the arguments last an hour, so you have 30 minutes where you're speaking, although you're not really giving a speech for 30 minutes. You're being peppered with questions from the bench. And
do they just do question after question after question, or do you have anything planned?
It really depends on the case. I mean, you have your argument that's planned, and then that can change rather suddenly when you, when you get a question that you either didn't expect or you don't have an answer that the justice who asked the question liked.
So. Well, you know, you called me right before you were going to go into the Supreme Court and talk to me on the phone and said you were going to do it. And my heart was pounding. I mean, I could barely hold the phone. I mean, this is not Letterman. This is not like doing Saturday Night Live. This is absolute terror.
Oh, but if I were on Letterman, I'd be a wreck. Or if I'm a wreck right now. But, you know, arguing in front of judges is something that I'm trained to do. And so it was less wreck-like.
Okay. And now I want to talk a lot about the FCC, because this is a new thing for us. Neither of us have ever had a radio show. We had this thing that I think they have to do. First of all, explain to us why CBS, and I won't talk about anything they said, because that is attorney-client privilege. But I can say that they were forced by the government to have a seminar with us before we go on the air. Is that right? Is there actually a rule? I mean, can you, if you're not smart, if you're a stupid station owner, can you not have your seminar with somebody? Can you just let someone on the air?
Well, I'm here.
But it was, as you know, I mean, you probably know what these seminars are. It's there's quizzes.
There were.
I know the quiz you're talking about. Not everybody
really
has a quiz.
Not everybody has a quiz.
Right.
There were quizzes. There were quizzes asking us if this were legal or not. And what I loved is the only thing I had an argument with really was the freedom of speech stuff, because the defamation thing I was so behind. You know, there was a question. I won't give you the exact example, but the idea was: can you call somebody on the air to tell them they've won a prize after someone else in their family has helped them win that prize and congratulate them, or do you have to tape it in advance and then get the okay? day, and I just went, no, you can't tape anyone on the air without their permission. Even if you're not going to air it, you can't tape them. And I was very, I'm happy for that rule.
Yeah.
So, so getting away from the defamation stuff, just the FCC, where the hell does the FCC come from, and where do they get off telling
and,
people
and
what they
can say? Can he say hell?
Well, I hope so. You know, the FCC was established by Congress in 1934. There had been an agency before that established in 1927, and the law really hasn't changed a whole lot since that time. And the restrictions on indecency that were adopted as part of that law have remained essentially the same since 1927. Now they've changed their meaning over the years.
How do they justify it? When they first went and said, we're going to put this law in, how did they justify that with the First Amendment?
Well, what do you mean, how do they justify it?
Well, I mean, the First Amendment says, Congress shall make no law. And then dot, 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 abridging the freedom of speech.
Well, you must have missed the asterisk that you know, you drop to the bottom of the page where it says, except radio and television.
Now, but seriously, how do they justify that? Well, I mean, somebody had to have said when this first was brought up, but wait a minute, we can't do that.
Well, in fact, Congress did that. They adopted another part of the Act, now Section 326 of the Act, that says nothing in this law gives Congress the power of censorship. And the difference is that they call the other part of the law, Section 1464 of the Criminal Code that deals with indecency, as saying, yeah, but that's not censorship.
Why?
Well, words can be tricky things, and it's a matter of just defining what you mean by that. Now, with any other medium other than broadcasting, the kinds of restrictions that the FCC adopts would be clearly unconstitutional, and courts have ruled that time and time again. But they have created something of an exception for radio and television, a very limited exception in this area.
I was under the impression it was because airwaves were limited. And I think you told me I wasn't right about that. Because I thought it was like, you know, there are a zillion newspapers, there are four radio stations, so we have an interest in keeping the radio stations the way we want them.
Well, the first place you go wrong is in using the word airwave, because there ain't no such thing. there are the laws of physics, which allow people to use electromagnetic spectrum to transmit sounds and pictures. And but people will commonly say that the FCC regulates the airwaves, which is what they called it at the time in 1927. And they do say that you can regulate it because it's scarce. In fact, the scarcity is created by the government that then limits how the spectrum can be used. But that has changed over time.
Okay, but you crazy freedom fighter, let's say you have your utopia. Okay, and let's say, does the FCC go away in your mind, and anybody just builds a tower and broadcasts?
Well, no. I mean, you know, the reason that the FCC, or before that, the Federal Radio Commission got created was because there was interference. You had people setting up radio stations all over the place and interfering with each other, and you really can't have that. But it doesn't set radio or broadcasting apart from any other resource. You can't have people, two people farming the same plot of ground. You can't build apartment buildings and parking lots in the same place. And for the same reason, you can't have two different broadcasters occupying the same piece of spectrum. So you have to have some method of allocating how that resource is going to be used. The government decided to nationalize spectrum, unlike the way it treats every other resource. You know, it's not true to talk about it in terms of scarcity. All economic goods are scarce. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they're all free.
So you would have... I would buy from who? From whom would I buy this hunk of spectrum? I mean, the land, Nevada, you buy land from the government, right? I mean, there's a certain amount of public land that then goes... I mean,
you're asking me about Nevada now.
Okay. But I mean, there...
Real estate.
Many people have bought land from the government, right? The government started out owning it, and then is that the same way you're supposed to do it with the spectrum?
There are a lot of ways to do it, and frankly, now with new types of services that are being authorized by the FCC, they will have auctions four blocks of spectrum, so the winning bidder will be the one who does it. The FCC historically used to do it by having these hearings where people would put in their applications, and then they would have to have this, like, trial where you would choose who is the best applicant. And then they would get the license, and it would go on and then be renewed every, you know, 7 years. And then that time, the duration of the license has changed over time as well. But now most licenses aren't given by the government. They are held by an existing licensee, and then they're sold to some other owner who then applies.
But they can take it away, right? Can't the FCC take your license away, or have they never done that?
No, they have done that. And you can have licenses revoked. You can have them expire.
This is the question I want to ask. Who has been hurt the most by the FCC? I'm not talking about the general culture being deprived of hearing certain words. I'm talking about what
you wanna
poor
name
schmuck went down hardest from the FCC, do you think, in all their years? Or you can choose several. I mean, how badly hurt can you get? I mean, sitting here in front of a microphone, how much damage can I do to myself and my company?
Well, the fact is, the FCC in the last couple of years has talked about revoking licenses if people violate the indecency rules.
Mm-hmm.
So if you, I would certainly never do it, but if you were to go hog wild here.
That had never happened. No.
And people weren't going to wrestle you to the ground, and you still had the microphone, it's conceivable that that could lead to a proceeding that would result in a license revocation.
And these licenses are worth hundreds of dollars.
At least, yeah.
And somewhere in the whole list of stuff that I read about this, there was jail time talked about.
Well, that's part of the law.
And
as I mentioned.
Has it ever been put into effect? Has anybody ever done time?
Of.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we don't worry about that. It really is a money thing, right?
Primarily, yes, that's true. You know, it's part of the criminal code. It's interesting. That section has bounced around between the Communications Act and the criminal code over the years, but now it's a criminal violation. But the FCC enforces it mainly through civil actions, through imposing fines and potential license actions. But again, that's been talked about but hasn't been done.
Now I'm going to bring out part of your past. After you're saying all this stuff, you used to work at the FCC, right?
That is correct.
What was your gig there? What did you do?
I was a legal advisor to an FCC commissioner.
Mm-hmm. How come you never got anybody in jail?
Isn't that what you're supposed to do? Like, we watch Law and Order, the prosecutor.
Yeah, they put people in jail.
That's what the hero does.
But I didn't have a badge. And you hear all those stories about the federal bureaucracy. It was a great gig. Just go in at 9, leave at 5, and you don't have to do much work. I'm joking. It was a hard job. And a very rewarding job. My commissioner was really an excellent commissioner, James Quello, and he was chairman in 1993, and at the time I was his chief counsel. So it was an excellent job, a great place to work, even though I really couldn't get behind all of the regulations. But it wasn't my job to express my opinions about whether or not I thought the rules were good rules or bad rules. My job was to provide legal advice to my boss.
And did you feel good about it?
It got to the point where I told him I could no longer give him advice on the indecency rules because I didn't think there was a way the agency could enforce them constitutionally. Mm-hmm. And he allowed me to recuse myself from those cases.
And what case? What case did you feel good about?
What case did I feel good about?
What style of case were you okay with that didn't feel like they... indecency bummed you out, but what was kind of all right?
Well, there were a number of instances where the agency was conducting rulemakings or taking other actions where it was trying to cut through and eliminate regulations that had grown up over the years and really made no sense that they existed any longer. And so, you know, it was a good feeling to be able to help with that. Mm-hmm. Kind of clearing out the underbrush. There were also cases where you had a licensee out there where they had run up into some bureaucratic roadblock or some other problem that they weren't able to do business or they couldn't expand their frequencies. To be able to help in individual cases like that where it was helping out, you knew what you were doing was helping out an individual broadcaster or someone in another industry that's regulated by the agency, that is rewarding.
But during that time, and what changed? What went nutty? I mean, I used to hear on the radio the who are you, where Roger Daltrey clearly says, which we're not going to say here, who the F are you, right? That's what they say on radio, I guess, when they want to get around that. And that just went through. And then Mick Jagger, when I was a kid, you know, got to scrape the S right off your shoes. That was on the radio, on Top 40 radio in Massachusetts, where I was growing up. What went away? How did all of a sudden the shock jocks not have the same freedom that the Rolling Stones and the Who had?
Well, those rules have always been there, and there have been, over the years, different cases that come up from time to time. In the last 2 years, the FCC has taken a decidedly different take on how it's going to enforce these rules, and it is getting more stringent, and so you don't hear some of the things on the radio that you used to hear.
But the rules never change. It's just the enforcement.
As I said, the law has been the same since 1927,
mm-hmm.
and what has changed is the interpretation. And in fact, the FCC never really had a definition of indecency until 1975, and that was the George Carlin 7 Dirty Words case.
How can Syria... George Carlin did not write those 7 words in any sort of rule about not being able to say them on television. He wrote them to sound funniest in a nightclub act. Didn't
true.
Anybody point that out? I mean, are they just going to go with what some nut says? I mean, I couldn't believe... I mean, sure, we want to applaud George, and George is probably, undoubtedly, I guess, the smartest comedian around. He is a hero to all of us, but how does he get to make that list? I mean, isn't that something that they should have done?
Well, you would think so, and... any list you come up with is going to be arbitrary, obviously.
Yeah, but not by a comic. I mean, you can be arbitrary without having a guy whose the name of his album is Class Clown. None of the people on the Supreme Court have ever had a major album out that said the words Class Clown on it.
Not that I've seen.
Then why do they go to George?
Cases come up and they kind of define what the area that the FCC is going to look at. And in this case, someone broadcast the bit on radio. And so a complaint came in, and the FCC looked at it and said, yeah, we think that this crossed the line. And it wasn't that George Carlin was defining these are the words that get you into trouble. That's what he said in his bit.
Sure.
But he wasn't sort of creating the universe for what the FCC was looking at. It's just that that was the case that the FCC decided, and it became precedent. And so those were the words. Now, the interesting thing was the FCC really thought it was going to lose the case. The case went to court, and at the Court of Appeals, the FCC lost. And the Court of Appeals said, this really isn't a kind of a legal standard that you can restrict speech with, because it's just not precise. No one really knows what you're talking about. And so the FCC appealed, went to the Supreme Court, and I think really expected to lose again at the Supreme Court, and yet won on a 5-4 vote, another squeaker.
And because they didn't have you in their court, that's why.
And so anyway, at the time, Chairman Ferris of the FCC said, we're going to enforce only those words. Because they figured, okay, this is what the Supreme Court ruled on.
They've already won.
And so we're going to apply
that's
this
what he said.
Very narrowly. And so if someone doesn't say one of those 7 words, it's not going to be subject to one of our enforcement actions. And so about 10 years, if it didn't fall into that list of 7 words, it was the de facto rule, even though it wasn't written down as an FCC rule.
Amazing. We got Bob Cromer here, smart guy. We've got a smart guy on the radio. More amazing than that, a smart guy with Ben Gillette and Michael Godeau. We're going to talk more about freedom of speech, the FCC. We got questions that we got from
email.
penradio@gmail.com. We'll be getting to those questions for a real smart guy on a real radio show. This is Vintage Nude Studios in Las Vegas. Free FM. Oh, is that a swinging bass player?
Are you
Ben Gillette? No, it was not. It was rhetorical.
Okay, rhetorical. Sorry.
We're here with my First Amendment attorney. I was talking about how cool it is to be hanging out with you and just be able to say, this is my First Amendment attorney, because I am such a heavy cat. I have got to have a guy with me all the time. This is the thing that that amazes me, is every single one of these meetings I've had, and I've had them at Showtime and CBS, and I've had them at Letterman. I've had them all over. Mm-hmm. Every single lawyer, even the standards and practices guy, like what's his name, Clotworthy, I think, at NBC, who's a Saturday Night Live censor, standards and practices guy. Every single one of them speaks completely freely. You know, they never use any of this, the F word, or they never say a-hole. They don't do any of that stuff. No matter how much, I mean, the bad guys, the guys that I was dealing with when we had a TV special and they said, these are the things you can't say, there was no pussyfooting around at all, which I can say as long as it's a whole
word.
Well,
which we're trained professionals. We get to use those words. You know, think of us as doctors.
Have you ever been in a meeting where someone said, hey, Bob, watch your language. Has anyone ever said, we're talking about the Pacifica case, and here we have the George Carlin routine, these are the seven words, someone went, hey, come on, man.
Well, no, I've never been in one of those meetings, except when I go and watch an FCC meeting where they're talking about a decision they're making, they will use expressions like F-word. But if you go back to the Supreme Court decision, they reprint, as an appendix to the decision, the full George Carlin monologue.
I read, you wrote, I don't know whether it was an opinion or in a journal or something, you wrote this great thing where you said, once they're saying F word, we don't know what that means. Did you write that great? Was it an article or something?
It may have been in comments to the FCC.
It was just great. If you're going to use euphemisms, maybe I don't know what they mean.
Yeah.
And a question that my wife had that is maybe the most important question is, what is your idea of utopia? How does the FCC run the airwaves?
Minimally, I think is the best answer. I think the FCC serves best when it just gets out of the way. I mean, it was there to prevent interference in the first place, or at least to set up some system that allocates frequencies. And if you just sort of lay out the rules for who owns what or who is in charge of what part of the spectrum, the rest of it pretty much takes care of itself. People talk about the public interest standard. When you get a broadcast license, you're supposed to live up to the public interest standard, which is a great thing, except nobody knows what that means. It's sort of defined on an ad hoc basis by each agency that comes, after the last one. And, you know, my feeling is, if you're providing broadcast service and people like it, that's the public interest.
Well, you're the one who came out against children's television. You were attacking blind people. You were trying to get porn over to the library.
And these are just my good qualities. Thank you very much.
No, but explain those cases. I mean, a little bit. Because that's true. Everything I said is true, right?
Well, the attacking blind people part.
But tell about that case, because that's
okay. Well, this was a case in which the FCC had adopted rules requiring what is called video description, which is, as strange as it may sound, television for the blind. You have a separate audio channel that you can tune into, and you have a separate script for a television show where, in the breaks between dialogue, you'll have an announcer, sort of like a PGA announcer, saying, "And now they walk across the room and describe what mm-hmm. action is taking place." The FCC had adopted that as a rule, even though Congress had expressly not given them the authority to adopt that rule. So I argued a case in front of the Court of Appeals in D.C., arguing that the FCC had gone too far, and that rule was thrown out.
Now, do you think that the government should be saying that you have to do this for the blind people? And if the government doesn't take care of them, who does? How do you get blind people to watch MacGyver? If they want to watch CSI, who lets them?
Well, I've watched a few shows of video description, and it seems like it was kind of interesting. And what I found most interesting about the whole case, though, was that you had different segments of the blind community taking very different positions on whether or not they thought this was a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
You had certain of the organizations very much in favor of adopting the rules, and you had others, in fact, some of the larger organizations for the blind, thinking that the FCC rule was demeaning
mm-hmm.
and was not really serving their interests. I think, like all media consumption, it's going to be a matter of taste. Some people will like it and some people won't. And the question is, the very one you asked, is this something that the government really ought to mandate?
The real question I have about the FCC is, if they are reflecting the public good, if the people of the United States of America don't want to hear a shock jock, don't the people of the United States of America just not listen to the shock jock, and then the advertisers don't have that book, and then there's no money for him, and then he goes out of business? I mean, why do we need another layer in there?
Well, it sounds so logical the way you put it. I'm really kind of stuck for an answer.
The poor man has to have a job. You got all that out. What is Bob going to do?
Well, you know, it's a funny thing because once you inject political factors into that very rational question, things kind of get funny. There was a former FCC commissioner, Commissioner Andrew Barrett, who gave that very answer at his confirmation hearings. I think he was asked that question by then-Senator Al Gore. Isn't there all this indecent stuff out there? And then-candidate Barrett for the commission spot said, well, I suppose there's a market for it, and people really ought to get the idea that they have off buttons on their radios. As a result of
that... And we're done! And the end, and you're out of a job, and the FCC is out of a job, and Al Gore, of course, we know is out of a job. We're all done!
But because Barrett gave that answer, he was required to answer a list of follow-up questions, written responses to the Senate Commerce Committee. I believe Al Gore voted against his confirmation. He was ultimately confirmed and served on the FCC with distinction. He was there during the years that I was there as a staff person. But I really think that is the answer. And it's even better than that in a way, because you think of the radio, the classic, you know, transistor radio, you have an on-off switch. But now with the media that we've got, we have so many more ways of selecting what we want to hear or see. And it really does raise the question whether or not the government ought to be making that decision for us.
Is anybody ambushed? I mean, is there anybody that can't tell the tone of a person talking that they might say something that offends them? And how bad is it to offend somebody? I mean, what harm does that do? I am offended at least 40 times a day by stuff I see on TV and hear. And who cares? I mean, that's just part of living, right?
Well, yes, it is. And, you know, fortunately, the First Amendment doesn't allow people to just regulate speech because someone might be offended.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is a pretty clear violation if you're trying to prevent people from just being offensive. As I mentioned before, though, radio and television operate under a somewhat different rule, and the main justification for it is that children might be in the audience. And that is true. The children might be in the audience, and they may hear things that, as a parent, you don't want them to hear. And the question is whether or not that then justifies some other type of government action that you otherwise wouldn't permit.
But why is that a universal? I mean, I've said this before.
Well,
in the
it's
show.
Not a universal.
I'm an atheist. I'm not thrilled about the fact that my kids are going to hear whack jobs saying that God is punishing people, giving them strokes, you know, saying that everybody who doesn't believe in their religion should die. I don't want my kids to hear that. Tough. I mean, why can't the other side toughen up?
I think their answer would be is you're in the minority.
Tough.
Yeah, which sort of transgresses the basic assumption of the First Amendment. It's there to protect people who are in the minority, and the individual is the smallest minority.
We have one question that we got on an email here from Rob H., who said, how can shows such as South Park get away with saying words like, and then there's a list? And South Park has gotten
I'm
away
sorry, what words?
With everything.
Yeah.
South Park gets away with everything. How?
It's on cable.
And FCC has no control over cable.
Well, it has certain controls over cable, but it doesn't have the same indecency controls over cable or satellite television that it does over broadcasting. And it has to do with a weird fact that the First Amendment protections vary based on the technology that you use to transmit the message.
So they can. What stops Comedy Central from showing any damn thing they want, anytime? They can show. I mean, I saw they're having Eddie Murphy they're showing now, Raw. They were talking about, but they're not going to, showing The Aristocrats, my movie that pushes the limits. So they can do anything they want.
Well, yes. I mean, yes and no. I mean, the interesting thing is there are other kinds of laws. Obscenity laws, for example, exist regardless of what medium you're talking about. So anything that is on cable that someone would consider to be obscene could still be regulated or banned. Indecency falls in sort of a nether world where it doesn't go as far as obscenity and it's not as well defined. And so you have a somewhat different rule.
So is what going to happen? I mean, I know you're here not to predict the future, but isn't this just a way to put these networks and broadcast radio out of business? I mean, HBO is able to put on Deadwood, Sopranos, these super hit shows that do fabulously, and then at the Super Bowl, you know, they're stopped from Janet Jackson doing a dance number, and what was it, 0.7 seconds of breast showed?
0.9 seconds, yeah.
That's so close.
You know, the conversion, that was about a second, right?
But isn't that just going to end up putting them out of the... Why would anybody watch network TV?
Well, still, it is the largest. It draws the largest audiences of the other media.
Yeah,
the
but if you graph it,
media.
If you graph it, it's going down faster than Elvis impersonators are going up.
I keep forgetting I'm in Vegas.
There will be more Elvis impersonators by the year 2025 than there are people watching network TV.
Well, something that people often forget is that when you're talking about particularly pay cable, where you have shows like Deadwood and broadcast television, you're really talking about different media, fundamentally different media that serve different audiences, even though the shows come over the same appliance in your home. They all come over the television. But you're talking about a niche broadcast market or niche media market for something like Deadwood. You could put Deadwood on broadcast television after 10 p.m. under the existing rules.
You could.
Because the indecency rules create what is called a safe harbor, so that after 10 p.m. you can air...
None of them do.
And I think
that shows the free market's working.
Well, I think it's largely because, you know, you're talking about serving advertisers that will or will not tolerate having Deadwood as one of the shows.
Tremendous. Advertisers making those rules is just wonderful. All we're wondering about is why the government is.
And audiences have different expectations. Are you trying to goad me into disagreeing with you? I don't really get the point of the question.
Okay, we're going to take a little commercial break. We're going to come back and try to find something we disagree with Bob about. This is Penn Jillette. What is it? Free FM is what it's called?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. We'll be back some. Gillette and Michael Goudeau at Vintage Nude Studio in Las Vegas, Nevada. And we have as a guest a really good friend of mine, freedom of speech whack job, Bob Korn Revere.
And I think that's the nicest thing anyone has ever said about
me. And we got a ton of emails asking you questions, and I've been so interested in talking to you myself, I haven't gotten to many of them. But this is one I love because I may be, and you may be, on a different side of this issue than people might think. Here's what it says. This is from Jeffrey in New York City. I live in New York City, and there are times I'm sitting on a subway, the doors close, then someone says, "Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, sorry to interrupt you. Now, till the next stop, which could be minutes, but it could also be 10 minutes, I have to listen to some religious zealot preach to me about his God. He is loud, I am trapped in the subway car, and I feel I should have the right to protect me in trapped situations. If I knew I was going to get a free sermon, I may have taken another subway train. And if you think I can just get up and walk to another car, you would be wrong, as it is illegal to go to switch cars while the train is moving. Do I have any rights? Are there any laws to protect me?" Jeffrey says, "Answer that question. Riddle me that, Cape Crusader."
Well, this is what we call public transportation. And all kinds of people say and do things on public transportation that people might find annoying. But once you start passing laws saying that you're going to allow them to haul them off to the pokey because they've annoyed you, you got a real problem.
So you're totally on the side of the religious nuts.
Strange as it may seem, yes.
And me too. And the anti-abortion people, what lines do you draw there? How do you feel about websites that say these are the abortion doctors' addresses and we hate them?
Well, that's a more complicated question.
Yeah, I know. I know it is. You thought this was going to be all softball.
Yeah,
just because we're friends. Oh, no. I'm going Dan Rather on your ass.
Well, I'm just going to walk out. They promised me nothing but softball questions. Actually, there was a case on that I've done some writing about, and I think that trying to penalize people for expressing strong and sometimes violent emotions is another problem under the First Amendment, that those opinions are protected.
Now, can I legally, two parts to this question, one is legally and one is in your opinion, what you think it should be. If someone is going in for an abortion, and I believe in my heart that abortion is murder, which many people do, am I able to get, you know, drill sergeant distance from them, you know, 4 or 5 inches from their face, hold up a picture of an aborted fetus, and scream that they're a murderer?
No, you're not.
No, you're not. How much space do I have?
Oh, I'm trying to remember what the exact distance was, and because there was a Supreme Court case on this about 5 years ago that upheld regulations requiring people to be a certain number of feet away. Mm-hmm. They couldn't do the sidewalk counseling as people were walking, which is what they call it.
What's the logic of that?
The logic is that they have a right to free speech, to express their opinions, but not in your face. Mm-hmm. And so it was an attempt at drawing a compromise between the two rights, the right to go in and have a medical procedure, mm-hmm. and the right to express your opinion about that. But you weren't able to sort of burst that bubble of privacy, I guess, for lack of a better term.
So really, the law should include that nobody from Italy can talk to an American. They always stand so too close. They're always too close.
And they do it on subway cars,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and they get really too close to you. Americans have a good solid distance when they're talking to them. This is comfortable. We're like, what, 4 feet apart? This is the way human beings should talk.
That's
sometimes
right.
I'm in a group of people, you know, and there's those people, they're either Californians
or
agents. Europeans, yeah. Or agents that get like right up in you,
agents.
And it makes me nuts. It makes me just nuts.
Californians are agents.
Now, what things do I say in, not with the FCC, but just on a street corner, can I say to another person, say, without touching, without a gun in my hand, without anything, what stuff can I say that I go to jail?
What, you have plans for the evening?
Yes, exactly.
I'm not sure I can answer that question.
But you are not allowed to call for the violent overthrow of the United States government.
Right. If something crosses the line into incitement, that can be...
What if I say that to you alone? So I can't incite you. You're not going to do anything. But just alone, not in a big group of people.
You whisper in my ear that you want to overthrow the government?
Exactly. And you are someone who wants to rat me out. Is that illegal?
Well, it can get you in trouble, I suppose.
Make you less popular.
I suspect in the end they'd find that you weren't a threat to the government.
And what about the Al Goldstein case, which I know is the most convoluted case ever? I'm not talking about the one in Topeka where he actually was totally on the side of right and beauty, but the new one in New York where he called up his ex-secretary, who he believed had stolen money, and said, I'm going to take you down. You're going down.
You know, if you actually are issuing a threat to somebody, that can be penalized. That can
and
be
how
penalized.
Do we decide if it's a threat? I mean, in the movie Hard Day's Night, starring the Beatles, in the movie Hard Day's Night, one of the lines that is the most chilling when you watch it nowadays is when they go up to John Lennon and say, his agent says, I'm going to murder you, John Lennon. Now, clearly, that's not who got him. It was someone else who shot him. If you don't carry out a threat at all, just one of these days, Alice, pow, to the moon, the courts have to decide if it's a real threat or not.
Yeah, and it's not an easy line to draw. I mean, it's just something that's decided case by case based on the context of the particular facts.
Yeah, because what I'm trying to get to, of course, is still I can't get over the guy at the electronics store when I'm wearing my No God shirt saying, that's a very dangerous shirt to wear. Not a threat, right?
No.
That's just
no.
A statement, it's a dangerous shirt to wear.
That's right.
Maybe it's got dyes in it that might hurt your skin.
That's one of those annoying opinions that exist in the real world that you just deal with.
So in this particular case, I'm on the opposite side for me. Right.
His intent was not that dye is bad for your skin to take it off.
Right, but
his intent was, I'm going to beat you if you wear that shirt again. And it was very clear that was his intention. But those were not the words.
But once you start trying to figure out what people mean as opposed to what they say, then you're into a world of trouble trying to figure out who you're going to haul off because they've crossed a line away from protected speech and into something else.
Okay, so threatening people, threatening the government, fire in a crowded theater, or yelling fire falsely
in a crowded theater, and causing a panic.
And causing
that's
a panic.
That's right. The exact quote.
Because, you know, in our show every night, I yell fire in a crowded theater just to snub my nose at that rule. What other stuff can get you in trouble? Well, what about the sexual harassment laws?
Well, obviously, there can be a lot of crass behavior in the workplace that is against regulations, against the law. That can be taken too far. mm-hmm. right? I mean, if it's just simply a question of whether or not someone is offended by a joke or, you know, something that they find distasteful, that is something that probably takes those regulations too far. But if you are considering, you know, the kind of quid pro quo sexual harassment where someone says you're not going to get that promotion unless you sleep with me.
Mm-hmm. But in any situation where that comes up, all you've got to do is go over the person's head. And, you know, unless it's the small company that is owned by that guy, you go over his head and he's going to say, listen, you're not using my money to get laid. You're fired. Isn't that always going to happen? I mean, if a guy at a big corporation is using that quid pro quo thing for sexual favors, isn't the guy above him just going to fire him? I mean, why does the government have to step in?
You would think in a rational world that would happen.
Okay, I would like, if I have my choice, I would like to live in a rational world.
Well, that's my choice too, but you know, we're stuck with this one.
Okay. And what about, you don't think that they will ever enforce blasphemy, the FCC will ever enforce that?
Well, I mentioned earlier that the FCC had changed its interpretation of the indecency rules in the last 2 years. One of the changes, and this happened after the 2004 Super Bowl, is that they decided they were going to enforce, in addition to indecency, against profanity. Now, profanity, the classic definition of profanity, profane means to blaspheme. Mm-hmm. That is the definition. The FCC acknowledges that that's part of the definition and says that profanity includes that plus other things, but it's hard to say if they would enforce against something that is simply blasphemous. They've left the door open to do that. I think it's doubtful that the FCC...
But, I mean, how could they even write that down? Isn't being a believer in Islam blasphemous to a Christian and vice versa? I mean, without even getting into people like me, you know, who really are blasphemers and infidels, and by every definition possible, isn't any religion blasphemous to another?
Well, as Robert Ingersoll said, everyone is an atheist with respect to everybody else's religion.
Yeah.
So I suppose that's true. But whether or not there's a risk that the FCC would go after you for being Muslim or being mm-hmm. atheist or being something else, I find that a stretch.
Yeah, when we were talking to some lawyers about this, they were talking about that that issue of nobody ever being arrested for blasphemy in terms of the FCC. And but Ingersoll did have a case himself, you know, before the FCC. No government case.
Well, that's right. And as a matter of fact, he was chased out of the state of Delaware.
Yeah. And he was the highest paid speaker at the time. I mean, he was a superstar at that time.
That's
and
right.
He came down for that. But now we're building up to the one question we have to ask that that Godot's been itching to ask, and you're not going to use the example of the movie star that everybody knows you're thinking about. But you use me. Use me as an example.
Are we allowed to say, suppose our lawyers said, you can't say Penn is gay. Can I say, our lawyer said we can't say Penn is gay? Do you know that? Our lawyer said we can't say Penn is gay.
Could we say, now we're using me as an example because the example
is
obvious.
But you're thinking of someone else.
We're thinking of somebody else. Right. But right. Is that protection? I was just saying what the lawyer said.
You know, the funny thing is, I used to teach in law school, and one of the questions I would get there and other places is, can somebody get sued if they do X? Now, the answer to that question is always yes, because anybody can file a lawsuit. Will they win the lawsuit? That's another question, and it's a lot more complicated. And the question that you ask is one of those complicated questions, because you're assuming that the movie star, whose name will not be revealed on this show, would sue somebody for defamation, saying that, in fact, in this convoluted question, somebody called me gay. And then you get into questions of proof, questions of what people perceived by what was said, and so on.
And the big question is, if there's nothing wrong with being gay, why are you suing anybody?
Well, that's right. Not that there's anything wrong with it.
Exactly. Bob Kornrevere is our guest. Yeah. We should have a six-hour show only when Bob's going to be on. Thank you so much. See you next time from Vintage Nude Studio. This is Ben Gillette.
And Michael Godot.
So long. Thanks a lot, Bob, man. You rock.
Glad to be here.
Freedom fighter.